Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamani Namaste Sasi Gauravani Bichani Nibhishesha Srinivari Pashkachara Deshitara Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Okay. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 12. Is it 12? Text 9. Okay. Yamna yogena sankhyena Dhanavrata tapodvarai Vyakhyas svadvyaya sanyasai Vapnuyad yadnavanati Yamna yogena sankhyena Dana Vrata Japodharai Vyakya Svadhyaya Sanyasai Raknuya Jyatavanati Yanna Yogena Sankhyena Dana Vrata Japodharai Vyakya Svadhyaya Sanyasai Vapnuya Dyapnabhanati
Yamna Yogena Sankhena Yamna Yogena Sankhena Dana Vrata Svadhyaya Sanyasai Vyakya Svadhyaya Sanyasai Yamna Yogena Sankhena
Yamna Yogena Sankhena
Dana Vrata Tapodharai
Dana Vrata Tapodharai
Vyakya Svadhyaya Sanyasai
Vyakya Svadhyaya Sanyasai
Vapnuya Jatnavanati
Vapnuya Jatnavanati
Yamna yogena
sankhena
Yamna yogena
sankhena
Yamna yogena sankhena
Mystic yoga systems. Sharikina. By philosophical speculation. I'm sorry, that was Sankhyena. My eyes are getting bad. Dana, by charity. Vrata, vows. Tapa, austerities. Advarai, or Vedic ritualistic sacrifices. Bhakya, by explaining Vedic knowledge to others. Svadhyaya, personal study of the Vedas. Sannyasai, or by taking the renounced order of life. Vapnuyat, can one obtain? Yatnavan, with great endeavor. Api, even. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Even though one engages with great endeavor in the mystic yoga system, philosophical speculation, charity, vows, penances, ritualistic sacrifices, teaching of Vedic mantras to others, personal study of the Vedas, or the renounced order of life, still one cannot achieve me. Purport. Lord Krishna here explains that it is very difficult to achieve His personal association, even for one who seriously endeavors to reach the absolute truth. The inhabitants of Vrindavan, such as the gopis and cows, were always living with Lord Krishna, and thus their association is called satsanga. Anyone who is favorably living with the Supreme Personality of Godhead can become sat, or eternal, and thus the association of such a person can immediately award others pure devotional service to the Lord. There's an austerity called Chandrayana, a fast in which one intake of food is diminished by one mouthful each day as the moon wanes, increased in the same way as the moon waxes. Similarly, there are painstaking ritualistic sacrifices and grueling studies of the Sanskrit Vedic mantras, which one may also teach to others. All of these tedious activities cannot award the highest perfection of life unless one gets the causeless mercy of the pure devotees of the Lord. It's stated in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam 128, Dharmaksvanushtita pungsam dishvakshena katasuya nopadaye yadiratim shrama eva ikevala. The occupational activities a man performs according to his own position are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the Personality of Godhead. Om Jnana Timlandisha Gnanjana Salakaya Chaksarunita Mena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Pancha Gopatu Vishcha Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavayo Namo Namaha. Jai Krishna. So in the previous two verses, before this verse, we saw how great devotees, such as the inhabitants of Rajadham, attained the association of Krishna and his devotees. And they attained Krishna by devotion, the process of bhakti. In fact, verse 7 specifically emphasizes the association of me and my devotees, they achieve me. This association of devotees being emphasized. Today's verse talks about processes that are insufficient to achieve Krishna. And that, of course, is sort of started in verses 1 and 2 in this direction, about things that will not be sufficient to attract Krishna or bring us to Krishna. Then it's describing the gopis, the residents of Vrindavan, who did attain Krishna. Now we're going back a little bit again. And again, for emphasis, Krishna is saying, these things are not sufficient to attain me. And in the purport today, the reference to these verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam, how all occupational duties are useless labor, shrama eva hi kevalam, because they do not invoke attraction to the messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, similarly, when we go back to the second chapter of the first canto, we also see the previous verses describe the process of bhakti, and then this is what will not work. So what we have is a juxtaposition of the how-to and the how-nots to attain Krishna in both places, in the second chapter of the first canto and here in the 11th canto. So we have descriptions of pure devotees who have attained Krishna, And then descriptions of processes that are really not going to work to reach the highest perfection. Now, it's interesting that these how-not-tos are rejecting bona fide paths described in the Vedas. Because these are not bad things. We're not talking about, you know, gross, you know, sense gratification or being, you know, completely entrapped in the material world. Describing philosophical speculation, charity, vows, penance, sacrifice, teaching of Vedic mantras, which should all be considered fairly positive religious activities. But it's stating that these are not sufficient. Even though these are bona fide paths, they are not going to bring us to the highest. So the Vedas describe many processes, both gradual and direct paths towards liberation or spiritual realization. There's different ways one could categorize these, but three processes basically are given in the Vedas: karmakanda, fruit of activity; jnanakama, jnanakanda, knowledge, process of attaining knowledge; and then upasanakanda, or the process of worship. And the upasanakanda is also divided in two parts: worship of the demigods and worship of Krishna. So we see these different types of worships throughout the four Vedas, the Upanishads, and in many different places throughout the Vedic literature. In fact, even the Bhagavad Gita has sections on karma yoga, jnana, dhyana yoga, sankhya yoga. So all of these different processes are explained. But of course, particularly if we look at the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna always brings the conclusion to bhakti. So in the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, where all the different processes are explained, because people are attracted, because people want to know about those. So Krishna explains all the different processes of self-realization, the different processes and types of yoga, and then after those six chapters, which are considered the preliminary, Prabhupada said that there's confidential, more confidential, most confidential, the first six, the middle six, and the last six chapters, the Bhagavad Gita. So the end of this sort of introductory six chapters, the very last verse is, "And of all yogis, the one with great faith who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself and renders transcendental loving service to me, he is the most intimately united with me in yoga and the highest of all. That is my opinion." So again, many processes are given throughout the Vedic literatures, but ultimately Krishna wants to bring the jiva to the process of devotional service. So why these different processes? Why are they all mentioned? If they are mentioned, then they are more or less rejected by Krishna. Well, there's different processes to fulfill different needs in human life, different interests, different degrees of advancement, different desires that the living entities have. So it's described that of those different goals, interests, and needs that the living entity has in this material world, they're broken down into dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. These are called the four purusharthas, the purusharthas which are needed in human civilization. Now, in Vedic culture, dharma is most important. And artha and kama, sense gratification, economic development, they come from dharma, or regulated religious life. You know, then there's some license, you know, for sense gratification, economic development. Of course, the Western culture, it's somewhat reversed. We start with artha and kama as most important, and then we tack on a little dharma, let's go to church on Sunday, or, you know, some very, very minimal dharma. And the main expectation, even of that, is material results, not necessarily spiritual advancement. Then, of course, the fourth goal, when one becomes tired or frustrated by trying to achieve happiness in the material world, is moksha, liberation, which basically, Prabhupada describes, comes out of frustration for material life. But that is valued by the jnanis and yogis as a goal. Now, of course, for the devotees, these are not so important. Sridhar Swami, in the purport at Bhagavatam 1087.21, says the four purusharthas are no more important than a blade of grass. That's pretty insignificant, a blade of grass. And he also says that the result of the chatur purusharthas are automatically achieved through bhakti. So in other words, bhakti, you're going to get whatever you need. You depend upon Krishna. Krishna will supply your economic necessities, those types of things. So there is this fifth goal of life, and that's pure love of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada, in his purport to Ancha Lila 724, says, The Purusharthas are the goal of life and generally refers to religion, economic development, satisfaction of the senses, and finally liberation. However, above these four kinds of Purusharthas, love of Godhead stands supreme. And in the Adi Lila 7.144, said, Panchama Purusharta Se Prema Mahadana. Love of Godhead is so exalted, it is considered to be the fifth goal of human life, called Krishna Premadana, the treasure of love of God. So, again, we can see that these different processes that are mentioned in the Vedas, they are bona fide ways of religious life or religious or spiritual practice, but they won't gain the highest goal. They won't bring us to the topmost platform of attainment of Krishna's association. And that's what the previous verses were describing. You know, how one should really strive to become like the residents of Vrindavan, who are enjoying their relationship with Krishna. And that really can't be done through these other processes. Now, another perspective on this of seeing the different processes that are there is sometimes we look at the paths of Pravritti Marg versus Nivritti Marg. And Pravritti Marg, of course, is the path of regulated sense enjoyment, where Nivritti Marg is the path of renunciation. There's a nice description of this in the sixth canto, and this is in the story of Narada Muni and his talking to the Haryashvas and Salyashvas, not just talking to them, basically getting them to give up the path that their father Daksha had put them on towards populating the universe, which of course required not renunciation, but getting married, being in household life, and having progeny. So Narada Muni told them, no, you don't need to do this. You're advanced devotees. You just take directly devotional service. Daksha was not happy. So, in fact, Daksha challenged Narada Muni that, no, you have the incorrect understanding here. And Daksha is our main proponent of Pravritti Marg. So he said in 6.5.41, material enjoyment is indeed the cause of all unhappiness. So he understood that. But one cannot give it up unless one has personally experienced how much suffering it is. Therefore, one should be allowed to remain in so-called material enjoyment while simultaneously advancing in knowledge to experience the misery of this false material happiness. Then, without help from others, one will find material enjoyment detestable. Those whose minds are changed by others do not become as renounced is those who have personal experience. So Daksha is saying, you have to fully experience material life, experience the suffering from yourself, then you'll become tired of it, you'll renounce it, and you take the spiritual life. What's the difficulty with that philosophy or that theory?
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work? Yes, it doesn't work. Why doesn't it work? Do people become tired of material enjoyment easily?
No,
and in fact, they tend to get further entangled. The more one involves oneself in material activities and sense gratification, it tends to become more and more entangling. One becomes immersed in it. One has to suffer reactions from that. One takes future lives, and the process of samsara, birth, and death continues. Now, one could say that ultimately, perhaps it does work, because over many, many lifetimes, you know, we suffer in this material world, and we finally become exhausted, tired of it, and turn to Krishna. So we could say, yes, it probably works if we're looking at the many, many, many lifetime process. But that's really not so desirable because that entails how many hundreds of lifetimes of suffering. So especially in Kali Yuga, we say this isn't a very good process. For one thing, of course, he's talking about regulated sense gratification according to laws of Dharma. Nobody does that now. It's not existent. So basically not a good idea. In fact, the Bhagavatam 7.15.47 says, according to the Vedas, there are two kinds of activities, Pravritti and Nivritti. Pravritti activities involve raising oneself from a lower to higher condition of materialistic life, whereas Nivritti means the cessation of material desire. Through Pravritti activities, one suffers from material entanglement, and by Nivritti activities, one is purified and becomes fit to enjoy eternal, blissful life. Well, that's a pretty clear distinction. I think we can see that the results of the goals are very clear, and devotees can understand which is the preferable path. So, devotees do take to the path of Nivritti Marg, the renunciation of material life and this material world. But just saying renunciation would be an incomplete understanding. It's not simply a renunciation, but rather service and devotion to Krishna is what the devotees take up. The best renunciation or austerity, of course, is described in Bhaktivedanta Sindhu by Rupa Goswami as Yukta Vairagya. And Prabhupada says in a lecture, Rupa Goswami says that as long as we are in this material world, we have to act. We cannot cease acting. Therefore, if actions are performed and the fruits are given to Krishna, then it is called Yukta Vairagya. So rather than just renunciation, just Vairagya, the devotee is interested in Yukta Vairagya, or offering everything to Krishna, doing everything for the benefit of Krishna in his service, using those things in the material world, including the material body, the senses, the mind, the gross and subtle body, in Krishna's service. And that way, we become purified and are able to make spiritual advancement. So, obviously, bhakti should be not untinged or unconnected with the lower goals of karma, jnana, yoga. It's described, of course, in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu 1.1.11, Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmanyanavrita. In other words, there should be no mixing of jnana and karma, or anavrita, yoga, other processes, in pure devotional service. But, of course, we know that bhakti often is mixed. We don't start out, most of us, on the pure platform or the pure position of the of devotional service. And therefore, there is some karma mishra bhakta or jnana mishra bhakta where there is some mixing of karma and jnana. It may not be on the pure platform. So here we're reading about how one can attain Krishna as the residents of Vrindavan do. Now, we might think that's a little difficult, and it is. It's not so easy to attain that exalted position of direct relationship with Krishna. So, for us, we have been given very, very important principles in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu and many other books throughout our literature, the principles of sadhana, of Vaidhi Bhakti. Of course, sadhana bhakti is mentioned first in the Nectar Devotion, and there are two parts to it, Vaidhi Bhakti and Raganuga Bhakti. And for most of us, the path of Vaidhi Bhakti is recommended. And in fact, I would say for all of us, anyone who is not not a pure devotee on the platform of Bhava, then Vaidhi Bhakti is absolutely necessary. It is the process that we begin devotional service and begin the process of purification. So this is described in the second chapter, Bhaktivedanta Sindhu. But before Rupa Goswami describes Vaidhi Bhakti, he first says that before you describe all the rules of Bhakti Vaidhi Bhakti, you need to know the first rule. And the first rule is always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. He says, and basically all of the processes of sadhana, of hearing, chanting, performing service to Krishna, are for that primary goal of always remembering Krishna and never forgetting Krishna. So that's the basis. It's somewhat like the idea that's described in the Nectar of Instruction as Niyamagraha. We don't want to neglect following the rules and regulations, but you don't follow the rules and regulations blindly without knowing the purpose behind them. In other words, over-attachment to the rules and regulations themselves is also undesirable, just as neglecting the rules and regulations are. So in the same way, when we're performing our sadhana, our processes of hearing, chanting, serving throughout the day, we need to know what this is for, to remember Krishna. And of course, that is the sequence of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. Through hearing and chanting brings remembering Krishna. So, we need to always remember Krishna. But that might be a problem. For me it is, to always remember Krishna. To remember Krishna every minute of every day, not so easy. But we have a nice explanation of this by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura. In the verse 128 in his purport, he explains the satatam, which means always. He says satatam means every day, not every moment. At least in the beginning stage, the neophyte stage of sadhana bhakti, of Vaidhi Bhakti. He said if it were every moment, he said it would be impossible And we would lose faith in the injunctions. We'd just give up. We'd say, well, if I have to remember Krishna every moment, every minute, I can't do it. I might as well not even try. So, Krishna says, it means every day. That means we perform sadhana daily and try to remember Krishna through regulated practice. Now, thus, that is why we have these programs. And Prabhupada gave us the morning and evening programs, and that's pretty much just the morning program for most of us. But for exactly this reason, that we have regulated daily sadhana. And of course, this is following exactly the principles that Rupa Goswami gave us of the 64 items, the five primary processes of chanting Hare Krishna, worshipping the deity, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, association with devotees, and living in a holy place. So Prabhupada so expertly set up our ISKCON society and our temples so that we are doing these all on a daily basis and thus executing the principles of sadhana bhakti. So this Vaidhi bhakti is not something, well, this is a beginning thing, this is just for neophytes and, you know, I'll get beyond it or something. We should all hope that we could go, that we'll go beyond it. But the fact of the matter is Vaidhi bhakti itself is a very powerful process. Rupa Goswami 1.2.12, Bhaktivinoda Sindhu, actually quoting from the Bhagavatam, says, by worshipping me through the various methods prescribed in the Vedas, and they've explained this means through the processes of sadhana, by worshipping me through these means, one will gain from me his desired perfection in both this life and the next. So the guarantee is there. We perform this regulated devotional service, and we will attain the highest goal. So, to begin this process of sadhana, of course one needs a little qualification. Not so much, but a little bit. He says, first we have to develop some faith. We all know that shraddha is the beginning of the process of the stages of bhakti. So, there needs to be a little faith, and it's described, where do we get that faith? It's received from the association of devotees. Through sadhusanga, through the association of devotees, one develops some faith. And this is, of course, described here in the Bhagavatam where we're reading in verse 7, where it says that simply by association with me, my devotees, they achieve me. So, first we have the association. How powerful and important that is. Excuse me. Then it's described that we should be neither too attached to material objects nor too detached. So there has to be some detachment, but false renunciation is not favorable. Our acharyas in their commentaries, Vishnu Chakravarti Yakor and Jiva Goswami, they describe that we don't want false renunciation, and Jiva Goswami says, that too much vairagya causes the heart to become hard and actually becomes an impediment to bhakti. But at the same time, there needs to be some preliminary, it's described, it needs to be some preliminary detachment to material things. Like Jiva Goswami says, bhakti is not dependent on anything else, but must have some indifference to karma or fruitive activities. So in other words, if somebody is too much absorbed in material activities, if they're too much attached, it'll be difficult. Of course, some purification will be there. You know, through any activity or process or any connection with bhakti. But it will be difficult if there's not a little bit of detachment from material life. So that's needed. We need some indifference to sense gratification to be able to focus on Krishna. Now, Vishwanath also says in his commentary to 1.2.15 that there are three types of responses to sense objects. One is that when the jiva encounters the sense object of material world, he can have an attitude of complete disgust. And he says that's more suitable for the process of jnana, of becoming, you know, not this, not this, I have no connection with this material world. Or one may be too attached, very attached to those sense objects, and that's suitable for the process of karma. But if one is devoid of extreme attachment or disgust, he says that is suitable for bhakti. So again, the bhakta has a balance. Not disgusted with material objects because he knows everything can be used in Krishna's service. And also not too overly attached. So, in summary, the principles of becoming Krishna consciousness, as enunciated by Acharyas, is the importance of the association of devotees, and thus developing faith, some indifference to sense gratification. And you're trying to think, well, how does that translate to us? Well, we know that we have the processes that are given to us, especially for initiated devotees, following the four ugly principles. The four ugly principles, of course, are sort of the epitome of attachment to material sense gratification, and by renouncing those or restraining oneself, that qualifies as this some indifference to sense gratification. It's sort of the preliminary mode of goodness platform or position by which then spiritual life can flourish. Regular principles in themselves do not give us spiritual advancement, but they give us the opportunity, they put us in the position where our spiritual mass advancement can flourish from the processes of hearing and chanting. Otherwise, it will be very, very impeded and it will be very slow. And of course, the third last principle, remembrance of Krishna through regulated daily performance of Vaidhi Bhakti through the processes of hearing and chanting. Prabhupada explains how we remember Krishna through this process as a purport to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 22:113. Prabhupada says, therefore, one must strictly chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra 24 hours daily. One may have other duties to perform under the direction of the spiritual master. That's again, not necessarily satatam 24 hours daily. But he must first abide by the spiritual master's order to chant a certain number of rounds. In our Krishna conscious movement, we have recommended that the neophyte chant at least 16 rounds. I always thought you're advanced if you can chant 16 rounds. That's the neophyte. The neophyte should chant at least 16 rounds. This chanting of 16 rounds is absolutely necessary if one wants to remember Krishna and not forget him. So the 16 rounds is most essential practice. So again, we come back to that point of always remembering Krishna, never forgetting him. You start with the principle of chanting rounds daily, as Srila Prabhupada has given us. So all this fits together very nicely. We can understand that there are so many processes that are given in the Vedic literatures, and they will certainly give one some advancement or some relief from the suffering material life, but they will not give one the complete satisfaction that one desires, because that complete satisfaction is only achieved when we are associating with Krishna. And first we associate with Krishna through the process of sadhana, through hearing and chanting, remembering Krishna. And then, of course, as one becomes purified, eventually one gains higher and higher stages till we can gain these positions that have been described in the previous chapters that the inhabitants of Vrindavan experience. The perfection of life, unalloyed love for me. And it says they can easily achieve me. So I wanted to finish with, this is in the purport to this very wonderful verse of the Bhagavatam that was quoted in the purport of 128. The one says, the occupational activities a man performs according to his own position are so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the God of Godhead. So this is from the last paragraph of Srila Prabhupada's purport to that verse in the Bhagavatam. It's very, very nice. It's very poetic. I always like this one. It says, the need of the spirit soul is that he wants to get out of the limited sphere of material bondage and fulfill his desires for complete freedom. He wants to get out of the covered walls of the greater universe. He wants to see the free light and the spirit. That complete freedom is achieved when he meets the complete spirit, the personality of Godhead. There is a dormant affection for God within everyone. Spiritual existence is manifested through the gross body and mind in a form of perverted affection for gross and subtle matter. Therefore, we have to engage ourselves in occupational engagements that will evoke our divine consciousness. This is possible only by hearing and chanting the divine activities of the Supreme Lord And any occupational activity which does not help one to achieve attachment for hearing and chanting the transcendental message of Godhead is said herein to be simply a waste of time. Srama Eva Hi Kevalam. So this is kind of a one paragraph explanation of sort of the purpose of human life, isn't it? The living entity is always hankering for happiness. And Prabhupada is also describing that we are hankering for freedom. It's interesting because we don't talk about that as much. Pursuant to some of our discussions about free will, we can see that this is so much inherent within the living entity. As Prabhupada is saying here, that we want to be free from this material world and experience the complete freedom that is there when we meet the complete spirit, the personality of Godhead. So this is one of those sort of paradoxes or ironies, because we all want to be free, but we become free through surrender. Through surrendering to Krishna, which means giving up the hold that Maya or material energy has on us, then we become free. So they'll say, well, how is that free? I was controlled by the material world, now I'm controlled by Krishna. The difference is that is our true nature. That is who we are. That is the self. The self is pure spirit soul in a loving relationship eternally with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And when we re-engage in that relationship, then we are free. Because we are in our Sanatana Dharma. We are in our constitutional position of service and love to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, how glorious is Srila Prabhupada? Are there any comments or questions? Maharaj, would you like to say something? No? No? Okay. Pranagavendaprabhu?
What I was hearing from you, the last purport. So unless the relationship with the Lord is not revived and the devotee is not experiencing, or the living entity is not experiencing Krishna's relationship, these four purusharthas will still stay, linger there. Or in other words, four purusharthas is present so long the relationship with the Lord is not revived.
Exactly. In other words, those are the real goals and needs in human society. We have to have those things, but of course, once the relationship with Krishna is established, then those become secondary, or those become superseded by the higher goal of Krishna Prema. But, of course, while we're in this material world, we still perform our duties, we still may have to appear to be performing economic development and things like that. Those are there, but the consciousness is different. It's not the same with the devotee.
That's nice. And Prabhupada's purport that you read, the last part of the sloka, it's very sweet. Mm-hmm. And I have one discussion. It's not an easy result, but you read in the translation or in the purport that through association of the devotee, one get bhakti. And if you don't have a devotee association, and all this list, the list is given in the sloka, the dana, charity, study, vrata, bhava, all this will not give you. So question comes that on the third canto, Kapildev says, Aho vata sapacho gariyan jat jibhagve vartate nama tibham. Once who is chanting on the tip of the tongue, he's already done all this vrata, dana, jagga. So how to be concerned? Those devotees actually did that, according to Prabhupada's book.
And then one is in a position where one transcends that.
Yeah.
So, if one can come to that position immediately, that means one's already gone through that, so it's not necessary. So the admonition, here's my logic on this. The admonition is take the pure bhakti. And maybe not everyone will be able to, because they may have to go through those other stages. But everybody who is ready can come to those stages, and therefore the encouragement of the Bhagavatam, of Prabhupada, of the devotees preaching, is for everyone to take this. Then there's another point. And that's just the mercy of Krishna and the mercy of the pure devotee. I can't find the quotes, you may be able to think of some, but you know, Prabhupada said something like, you know, you have to be fortunate or something, and Prabhupada said, I have made your good fortune. So sometimes just by the mercy of the pure devotee, even if one is not so qualified, maybe if one has not gone through all those processes, studied all the Vedas, done everything like that, and by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who gave the chanting of the holy name freely, even to the most fallen. So, I wish I could think of some verses or purports to substantiate this, but my understanding is, in Kali Yuga, the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the mercy of his pure devotees, the acharyas, the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, is such that even those of us who are maybe very fallen and haven't perfected all of these things can immediately come to the process of Krishna consciousness and ultimately pure devotional service. Does that sound right?
Yeah, very good. Good answer.
Maharaj, think so? I don't know. I don't know if I'm speculating here, but that's my understanding.
If you want to become a devotee with fixed sadhana, that means you have done last life all the pious activities. In this life also you are born and did all the pious activities. But one of his disciples opposed Prabhupada. I did not do that. I ate beef and all these things. I did not do any of them. Then Prabhupada put a pause and he says, I made you fortune.
Yes.
So you are right. That's the
cause of mercy of the devotee is there. Madhubuti?
I was thinking about one example.
Oh, that's right. Wait, the microphone.
I was thinking about one example in our scriptures about the hunter who was killing, half killing animals.
Sorry.
And then by Mahamuni's mercy, he got love of God. So we have examples that, yeah, maybe he didn't perform all those activities and he was half killing animals, and then by the mercy of the pure devotee.
Yeah, there are many examples like that. There's just the association of the pure devotee is so powerful, you know, that it has that effect of purifying the soul. Guru Prashant.
Prabhu, I don't know if I understand this, but the highest thing is to please Krishna. But like in the Bhagavad Gita, it says, you know, to give charity in the different modes and to do all these activities in different modes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, personally, I know like to serve Prasadam is the best because it's Prasadam, and to give charity, I mean, to support the festivals are great. But sometimes somebody's begging the street, you know, and they come, I'm so hungry. And I know sometimes they'll go out and buy meat or something or drugs or something. I'm not sure what they... I don't give them because I'm thinking I don't want to get implicated in this karma. But when I walk away, it feels so bad. I thought maybe he was really hungry. Maybe I should have. So I don't know if it pleases Krishna, or I'm thinking you always want to please Krishna, do the right thing.
Yeah.
So in a situation like that, what do you do?
I think there's two perspectives. One, of course, is we always want to give the highest to people, which is Krishna consciousness. So obviously if you can remember or think about it, to have some prasadam with you, if a person says they're hungry, of course, if you can give them something that would be purifying, it would be better. And, sometimes we speak a lot against mundane charity or mundane work like that. On the other hand, we also have that example of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, who actually told his householder devotees, you know, to give, not to just, they were of this mood of, well, I'm not going to give to anybody because, you know, the same thing. They'll just use it badly, or it's, you know, it's not going to help them in Krishna consciousness. And he actually said they'll become hard-hearted if they don't give in charity. In other words, there's a natural compassion when a living entity is suffering. And so we should try to help. Like, for instance, when I was in Bhaktivedanta Village in California, there was a couple doors down, we were out there on the front, and down the street, a house went on fire. And our devotees were actually got there way before the fire department because it was in a rural area, and they really helped put out the fire, and neighbors were so happy. And like, so should we, you know, in other words, we could say, well, that's their karma. Their house is burning down. It's not going to help them advance in Krishna consciousness. Let the house burn down. You know, but we don't. You know, there's a natural, you know, devotees are kind-hearted. Now, if we can give Krishna consciousness, obviously that's best. You know, if there's a situation where we can help them, and actually sometimes when you help someone like that, then they're more receptive to you. First of all, you made a good impression, you made a friend perhaps, and then they're willing to hear you. So I think we have to keep all these things in balance.
I always say, chat Hare Krishna when I get
there. Well, sure.
Yeah. And sure. I always say, don't buy any meat, please. And then you say, you know.
Yeah. Okay, good. I thought there was another hand in the back. Oh, Sukhita. And then we'll. Oh, I'm sorry, Prabhupada. You're next.
I was going to say, actually, it does help in Krishna consciousness because it's a human quality to have mercy, all different kinds of mercy. So when you see the devotees kind of full of the help, then it makes them think, oh, you know, and we've seen that, you know, just from different food programs and different programs of charity, that it puts people it's in a different way. So it does help their Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, and sometimes we can be. I was with a Sankirtan partner in Miami, who you know, and we were out there at the lights or something. Somebody came by and asked directions, and my Sankirtan partner, we were all pretty neophyte then, told him the opposite way to go. And I said, "Why don't you do that?" I said, "Well, he's just, you know, out for sense gratification. You know, if I send him." No, we don't cause undue suffering on the living entities. You know, we're not instruments of their karma to punish. Like, what are you thinking? Anyway, that's kind of that's the neophyte, you know, approach. No, we wish people well. We want them to be. We don't want them to suffer. Otherwise, why are we doing anything? Why are we out doing anything? Approaching the living entities, if not because, at least Prabhupada had compassion, following his footsteps, compassion for the living entities, and the same way Prahlada Maharaj described in the seventh canto. So, you know, and of course the highest compassion is to give Krishna consciousness. Shri Prabhu, enlighten us.
So, I was
thinking, by the way, welcome very much. I'm glad you're able to come for Radhastami. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
I will.
I was thinking of there's the ascending and descending.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, you know, the Bhagavatam is teaching us, you know, the mercy comes down, and through the pure devotee, bhakti comes from bhakti. But at the same time, you know, the pure devotee instructs us to do all these things, you know, perform austerities, get up early in the morning, mm-hmm. you know, chant mantras, you know, and so on and so forth. But we're doing it under we're doing these things under the direction of the pure devotee.
Exactly.
So it's a lot different than just like endeavoring on our own, you know,
yeah.
groping in the dark,
yeah.
you know, trying to figure out, you know, on our own how to get back to the spiritual world through all these things.
In fact, the Nectar Devotion probably gives that exact example when he's talking about Vaidhi Bhakti and Raghunuga Bhakti. He says in the beginning, the neophyte devotee rises early in the morning and does these things on the instruction of the spiritual master. Then eventually, one may become spontaneously attracted to these processes, you know, as one advances. So yeah, that's the process. On the order of the spiritual master first. Yeah. Anything else? Over here? Let me see.
The original translation.
Oh, could you? Yeah, why don't you give her the microphone and then scroll down to the translation. Okay. Thank you, Keshav.
No, exactly.
Okay.
Oh, right, that's a good point. So, you know what, maybe it doesn't even matter. I was just going
to
say...
You want me to read it?
Sure.
Okay, here is the translation of the verse. Even though one engages with great endeavor in mystic yoga system, philosophical speculation, charity vows, penances, ritualistic sacrifice, teaching the Vedic mantras to others, personal study of the Vedas, or the renounced order of life, still one cannot achieve me.
Yeah, exactly, because if you notice, like, all of those things can technically be done without bhakti.
Yes.
You can do it for the power, you know, to gain cities or other things like that, mm-hmm. so of course it wouldn't bring Krishna fame if you're doing it for self-interest.
Right. Oh, that's a great point. That's exactly the point here. Thank you. That, all these things could be done, or probably they could be done in Krishna's service, but if they're devoid of Krishna, and they're not connected, then we're not going to reach the result.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.